recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hi there, folks. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave. And also, we are joined today by Rick Wall, who is one of our loyal listeners, and Felix in New Jersey, who is also one of our loyal listeners. Hello, guys. I trust you're all doing well.
Howdy.
Yeah.
Howdy.
Hello.
Howdy.
Cheers.
Hello, everyone. Now, before I begin our episode today, I want to mention that Robert came across an absolutely fascinating article by a writer for the New York Times, and he posted it on the message board at our Twilight Zone discussion group. And it's so good that it deserves a few minutes of comment. So I'm going to turn it over to Bobby because he was especially impressed with this article. Bobby?
Thank you very much, Lynn. Yeah, I thank Robert for this on the board, but it bears mentioning on our radio program, too. He sent me the link to that. I don't generally read the online edition of the New York Times, so I would never have seen it if not for him. So thanks very much, Robert, for that. It's a fascinating article for anybody who hasn't seen it yet about the Twilight Zone and its relevance to today, coming to the conclusion that the Twilight Zone will always be relevant 50 years down the road or 100 years down the road, which is certainly very true. Two things in the article, I certainly agree with what was said in there, but two things really jumped out at me, and there's nothing new. There's a couple of comments about Rod Serling. Nothing new. We've all read the books about him, and we know his story, that he died at 50 from the ravages of six packs of cigarettes a day, which I find absolutely astonishing that a man would smoke six packs of cigarettes a day. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, he literally committed suicide. Had he lived, had he not died of heart disease, he probably would have had lung cancer at some point. It's just a tragedy that a man with that kind of talent would just throw it away over an addiction. I think I would feel better if he was a hardcore drug addict and he died of that than this. This seems so ridiculously frivolous. The other shocking thing is that she says in her article that he was never particularly happy with the show, that The Twilight Zone was never a big hit in the ratings-wise, and he eventually sold the show into syndication. And she says, thinking he had not written anything of lasting value, which is really quite amusing. I mean, if anybody in the history of TV ever wrote anything of lasting value, he's the one. And it's just a tragedy, I think, that he never really felt that way. He didn't live long enough. He'd be 86 years old today. And, you know, it's just a pity that he never lived long enough to see this happen, or just a couple of years ago, having his face on a United States postage stamp. To think that he did nothing of lasting value is truly, absolutely unbelievable. This is a great article and is written by longtime columnist Maureen Dowd, who has worked for the New York Times for the past 15 years. And I went and looked up her biography because I wanted to see whether she was a typical baby boomer who grew up with the series. And she's 60 years old. So you always, you know when people go on about the Twilight Zone, they're of a certain age. People who were there at the beginning, it means nothing more to them than it does perhaps to somebody much half the age who found it later. But everything she says in there is true, and thanks very much to Robert for sending me that and allowing me to put it on the board. And I also want to thank Robert for something else that hasn't come up yet, which is he reminded me about a week ago that though we did a favorite episode poll for season one, we never did one on the worst episode of season one. So that's coming up next week, probably early in the week. We're going to do a poll on the worst of season one. And then a little bit later, about a month down the road, we will also do season two. There's one other thing in that article that I found particularly amusing because we all lived through that regrettable sci-fi marathon about 2 weeks ago where they sliced and diced up episodes at random anytime they felt like doing it. Because Rod Serling, if you look in that article, had made some comments about how difficult it was to be creative when you've got rabbits dancing on the screen with toilet paper, and they're just, you know, I don't remember that that commercial from back in the early 60s, but it's really not much different from what you see today. And I bring that up because in where we live in Seattle, the Twilight Zone is not only being seen on the Sci-Fi channel, but also a relatively new, at least nationwide, cable channel that specializes in old TV series dating way back to the 50s, and that's called MeTV, Memorable Entertainment Television. They're showing the Twilight Zone, at least in this area, at 11 o'clock every night, and they are not cutting up these episodes at all. So if you have that channel, and you don't feel like taking out your DVDs, take a look at them. They're showing them in the exact order they were presented, and we have so far not found a thing. Now, one more thing. When we talked, we all complained about what they had done to Sci-Fi, and Lynn had mentioned that in one of my favorite episodes, The Hitchhiker, she named exactly the scenes that she thought had been cut out. And we watched it together a couple of days ago when they presented it on MeTV, and she was exactly right. They cut out the scene where Nan Martin goes into the diner to talk to the waiter in there or the guy running the place about what was happening to her. And more shockingly, the scene that follows it, which is where the character on the road comes right up to the window and talks to her. They cut it out, and I timed it this morning, and it's exactly 2 minutes, just enough time to do 2 minutes worth of commercials. Absolutely outrageous, a total desecration. Just
that was
unbelievable.
A key scene. That was a key scene because the hitchhiker talked to her.
Yeah, you're right.
Her.
It was the first time he talked to her, of course. It's absurd. So they cut that out for 2 minutes of lousy commercials, and of course we all know what they did to the others. Now, I want to thank everybody at the group for writing to the Sci-Fi channel like we did to complain, but isn't it interesting that they didn't see fit to answer a single solitary one of those letters? They could care less. They didn't write to anybody and give an excuse for why or anything. They just simply ignored it. Pretty sad. I guess it could be said that for people who can't afford the DVD set, better to have it somewhere than nowhere, but that is really a total, total disgrace. Anyway,
I felt really bad about it when I was watching the I was working that night when it was running on that Sunday, so I had the TV running at work the whole entire time, and the one episode I came in and out on was The Mask, and especially the ending part where it's revealed about the faces of his relatives, and the instead of showing the scene where they removed the father's mask, it cuts that scene out, and it shows the butler carrying his mask out.
That was a disgrace.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, if I can say something, though, about the article for a second. Most artists don't think their stuff is any good.
I think
I told David this story. One day I was in a art museum. I forget exactly what. One, and they had a exhibit of a relatively new artist, and I'm sitting there, and I noticed a lot of people were looking at one picture, and I was looking at it myself, and this guy walks up, and he goes, "So what do you think of the painting?" And I said, "It's not bad." And he said, "Yeah, really? Why?" And I, to the best of my pedestrian knowledge, I told them, I never thought of it that way. Well, you know. I don't like it. I think it stinks. Actually, you said something else, but I want to keep the rating low here. Anyway, so I asked him, you know, you seem to know what you're doing. Who are you? He goes, read the signature. And I turned and I go, "You're the artist?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "Oh, come on, it's great." He goes, "I don't think so." And all artists are like that.
Well, that may be a good thing because it causes you to try to be better if you are completely pleased.
But
everything you do, you give
critic.
Up and say, "I'm perfect," so then that's the end of that. So.
But isn't it true that everybody's their own worst critic?
Yeah,
sure.
True.
Everyone is always their own worst critic. Everyone believes that they're not good enough, while the public says, "You're great," and they say, "Nah, I could be better." Yeah.
All right, why don't we turn this over to Robert? I think you wanted to talk about that article a little bit, didn't you, Robert?
No, that's okay. You pretty much said what I was going to say. It's just I didn't know if she got her source material from, or did she actually interview Doug Brody, who wrote the 50th anniversary?
I'm not sure. Well,
yeah, that's what the one point I was wondering about. But Yeah, she pretty much said, you know, looking at Summer's lame crops of movies and previews, you can appreciate Serling's upbraiding of the entertainment industry for our mediocrity and attentiveness, our commercialism.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all too frequently our deadening and deadly lack of creativity and courage. Meaning, you know, today's movies and shows that are out today. So, yeah.
Well, he always felt like a failure. I mean, even his wife, Carol, said that he felt like he failed. And, you know, and she says, sadly, he gave himself a forgetting, which is true, because he died never realizing what an impact he had on so many people. He never knew how great he was.
Stephen King felt that way about Carrie. That's why when him and Tabitha was living in a trailer during that time back around the 70s, he tossed it in the trash, and she pulled it out and read it and told him to finish it, and Carrie turned out to be one of Stephen King's bestsellers.
So what is the answer to that? When does the genius figure out that he really is one? When does he get happy? When he makes a certain amount of money, or is it possible while you're still living that he'd be happy?
When he's dead. When he's
they
dead,
don't.
He
yeah.
doesn't realize
yeah.
it. He dies. He never realizes it, but everybody realizes it after he's gone.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, very sad.
All
okay.
Right, you go.
Well, anyway, our episode today is titled Static, starring Dean Jagger. So here we have Ed Lindsay. He's one of the tenants of Vinny's Boarding House.
You want me to go ahead and run the thing before you begin?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, see when I get off track here? Yeah, go ahead, run that opening clip, and then I'll go back to the...
I did something special for today's show, so I hope everybody enjoys it.
Oh, well...
From Hollywood, the Raleigh Cigarette Program, starring Red Skelton, with David Forrester and his orchestra, our singing star, Anita Ellis, Gigi Pearson, Verna Felton, Pat McGeehan, and yours truly, Rod O'Connor.
Blondie and Dagwood are talking to Alexander, who's just arrived home after a hard day with his teacher.
Well, Alexander, how did school go today? Huh? I said, how did school go today?
I didn't notice.
Hey, what's the matter with you? What happened today?
I don't know. I haven't seen the evening paper yet.
And now, Mr. Serling. Item of consequence, a radio. A carryover from that other era when quiz shows went up to only $64 and entertainment was aimed only at the ears. Mr. Charles Beaumont has given us a most unusual story called Static. We invite you to watch Mr. Dean Jagger fill with a few of these knobs, change a few stations, and find a couple of programs that are broadcast only in the Twilight Zone.
Yes, sir, Princeton, there's your song. And here's the signature melody. Bringing to a close another program by Artie Shaw, the king of the clarinet, and his orchestra making dance history in the Blue Room of the Hotel Lincoln in New York City.
Back to you, Lynn.
That's great. That is so great. Well, okay, Static is Ed Lindsay is one of the tenants at Vinny's Boarding House, and he longs for the days when radio was the main source of entertainment. And he's tired of watching everyone else sitting in rapt attention in front of the TV every day with his mindless programs and commercials. So he digs out his old vintage radio from the basement, carries it up to his room, and he finds that it still works. And he discovers that it broadcasts from the past. And the broadcasts are coming through the speakers, but the only problem is he's the only one who can hear them. Every time he brings Vinny or the professor or anyone who can hear them, all that comes through the speakers is static. So you have to understand now, Vinny and Ed were once engaged to be married, but it never happened. And she believes that this is all in his head, and he's hearing these programs because it reminds him of their past romance. One day when Ed's out, she sells the radio to a junk dealer. Ooh, so he's enraged when he finds out, and he buys it back. And he brings it back up to his room. He turns it on and finds himself transported back to 1940, where he's 20 years younger, and so is Vinny. They embrace, and we're left thinking that maybe they've gotten a second chance at love. Maybe. We don't know if it's all in his mind. We don't know if it really was a time travel thing. Now, I have to admit that watching Static actually had me reminiscing about my Christmas of 1968. I was 9 years old. 9 years old, my grandmother gave me what I thought to be the greatest Christmas gift on the face of the earth at that time. She gave me my very first portable Philco transistor radio. I'll never forget that little silver radio in its black leather case with a wrist strap. I had it for quite a few years. I took it with me everywhere and even hid it under my pillow at night so I could fall asleep to my favorite pop music station. You know, back in the early 70s, late 60s. No, actually, this was the mid to late 60s. And, you know, it was the pop music back then. And luckily, my mother never caught me because she would have put an end to that nightly ritual. I loved that Philco radio, though, and I loved the music of the 60s and the 70s more than that. So I can totally understand and relate to what Ed Lindsay was going through in Static. But I do understand Ed missed the good old days before mindless television took over the airwaves. You know, he missed all the wonderful music, classic programs, and stars he used to listen to when he was younger. Now, when he heard that music and those shows again on his antique radio, he was swept away, wasn't he, to happier times when he was carefree and in love with Finney. Ed's only problem with this was that nobody could hear it except for him. It was only Static that came through when somebody else came in, hence the title of the episode. Now, one thing I want to read a quote from a book by Charles Beaumont. We all know Charles Beaumont. He was an amazing writer who contributed some wonderful stories to the Twilight Zone. The book is titled Remember, Remember, and it's now out of print, but I bought it many years ago when it was still available, and it's a wonderful book. The short excerpt is also in Mark Scott Zachary's Twilight Zone companion book, and it has to do with radio shows from the past. Now, Mr. Beaumont says, and I quote, "The world of radio was real to us. There are squirts and small fry today who will soon be the us of then. And I know some who haven't turned a radio on in their entire lives. I try to tell them what it was like, but they don't understand. They can't believe I'm talking about the little plastic box in the kitchen that plays rock and roll and gives us the news, and I'm not sure I believe it either. Television is a substitute for what we had, and I deem it a bad one. It inspired neither loyalty nor awe. It does not thrill, transport, terrify, or enchant. It only entertains." End quote. Now, at one point in this episode, Ed Lindsay says to the other people at the boarding house, "Radio is a world that has to be believed to be seen." That's very true. Because in the early
theater
days of radio,
yep.
Exactly, you had to use your imagination since you only heard the shows. As some of us, or most of us maybe, may or may not know, Charles Beaumont died in 1967 at the very young age of 38 from a terribly debilitating disease. And he wrote Remember, Remember in 1963. So while I agree with his feelings that nothing can compare to the radio in terms of using your imagination to be swept away into a story, he also didn't live long enough to see the TV and movies came a long way in terms of being able to transport, terrify, and enchant. His book, however, can be found from time to time on eBay. It doesn't sell cheap, but it's an excellent book. So I do understand what he's saying, but then again, he didn't live long enough to see things advance. So anyway, as far as this episode, I didn't think it was one of the Zone's most riveting episodes, but it held some intrigue for me. And I like the premise of Ed hearing the radio playing shows from bygone years, many of which were presented live at the time. And I also found it interesting that the radio DJ was Bob Crane, who later went on to play Colonel Hogan in the TV show Hogan's Heroes. And the acting was good. Dean Jagger played the cantankerous disgruntled man quite well. Carmen Matthews does a fine job as Ed's former love, Vinny. And, of course, Robert Emhart was a wonderful character actor who was perfectly cast as Professor Ackerman. So I enjoyed this episode enough to rate it 2.5 above average. So that's all I have to say, and on to Robert.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, unfortunately, I went backwards on this, so I'll stress that out a little bit later here. But, you know, while I was watching this episode, you know, this is pretty much how I felt while watching it. Very much boring as sin. And I never knew that sin could be boring, but I guess it can be, depending on what it is. Now, I love your story about you getting the radio for Christmas. I was born in 63, so I came on when we had the transistor radios and heading into color TV at the time. So radio stations were switching from radio programs over to music at that time. So,
well, you're only 4 years older than me. I was born in 15. Wait, you were born in what?
63.
Yeah. I was born in 59. Yeah, so you're only, yeah. I'm only 4 years older than you. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you've seen the wave of change coming in radio, which is, you know, sad at that time. Because you know, the new thing was TV, and that's where a lot of the radio programs are going to. Most of your stuff on early TV were actually radio programs, like Gunsmoke, during that time that made the transition over to television. So one point that was brought to my attention on a podcast that I was listening to, a gentleman they were interviewing was talking about how they had to change cast members of Gunsmoke because the one that originally did Marshall Dillon was the gentleman that plays Frank Cannon in the Cannon TV series. He voiced Marshall Dillon, William Conrad. And,
William Conrad, yeah.
They replaced him with Matt Dillon, and the guy that played Boyd the Barber, I think, played the doctor in Gunsmoke, and they replaced him. And pretty much the whole cast they replaced from the radio show into the television show just because they felt they didn't have the look, you know, going over. And, you know, some people did try original people. Like, for example, the Blondie clip that I played, they transitioned, Arthur Lake transitioned over to television when they brought Blondie on. So, yeah, getting back to my point, of course, getting off on a tangent there a little bit. I won't get much details in the episode because Lynn already talked about it. But, you know, I kind of given myself a choice in the matter when I was watching this episode. I could A, watch the whole story in its entirety or skip through. B, I could go outside and watch the grass grow. Or C, I could go watch the paint dry on the house. Well, since I live in an apartment, you know, C's out. You know, my thing there is out of the question. And B, I don't have time for, you know, grass takes a while to grow unless you have a real rainy season. So A is the winner on this one. I just couldn't bring myself to watch the whole thing. I was watching, usually I got it all on disc. I got the whole 156 episodes on disc, but it's convenient for me just to go on the internet and watch that, go to the Share Motion site and watch it from there. So. But, yeah, I literally fast-forward to the boring parts. And, you know, two points that I did like was when he called to hunt the radio station he was listening to and find out that the station has been out of business for 15, I think it was 15 years.
Yeah.
And then in the very end of the episode where we get the time travel element. Now, as Lynn said, she didn't know if he physically went back or not. I said the same thing, too. When he goes back to his younger self, did he physically go back or mentally did he go back? I mean, you know, because he hugs his wife, younger wife, but it seemed very fake, almost a soap opera-like.
You know what, Robert? I was thinking also of Somewhere in Time. Did he will mm-hmm. himself back? I mean, you know, in Somewhere in Time, of course, Christopher Reeve, he went through great pains. I mean, changing his clothes, cutting his hair, and doing everything, getting everything out of the room, which, you know, Ed Lindsay didn't. But you kind of wonder, was it the thing that he had such a will to go back? Was it like Somewhere in Time where he willed himself back and he was back with Finney? Or was it just in his mind?
See, I would want to be real. I'd like to go back to see Jane Seymour back then.
Oh,
that's
Jane
just me.
Seymour, wasn't she beautiful? Yeah. She was beautiful.
But, yeah, you just don't know. I guess, you know, Beaumont kind of left it for the people's imagination how it ended. But, you know, one thing that was missing is why did they not play a clip from The Shadow? Or the Orson Welles broadcast of 1938 War of the Worlds would have been nice. I mean,
oh,
it was
yeah.
a nice little touch that they put the, you know, FDR one on there. But it would have been a nice wink to the past that they would have did that. So.
Something called royalties.
Yep, definitely. But, mm-hmm. you know, they could have gotten permission somehow, I would think, you know, to do that. Because they did play some old radio shows on that episode. So, I mean, you know, I imagine they had to get permission to air what they did. So, but that was just my thought on it. As I usually do, I find a couple clips here and there to match into what we're talking about today. And, of course, the subject is radio. There was a movie that came out called Frequency, which had Dennis Quaid in it, and about a son that has an old, I would call it a ham radio, I guess.
I remember
during that,
that yeah.
time when ham radios were popular. His son goes back and he talks to him from the past. So here's the trailer for that.
Once in a decade, massive solar storms invade our atmosphere, disrupting global communications.
Darren, it's your dad's old ham radio. Go over to Ben, huh? Plug it in.
And causing unexplained phenomena.
W2QYV.
This is Frank Sullivan.
Hello? What'd you say your name was?
Frank Sullivan.
Is this some kind of joke?
That will allow John Sullivan to talk to his father.
What do you say we tame this Bronco, huh?
You and me. Spare guts.
Who's been dead for 30 years.
But how could it be?
I don't know. But we gotta be talking off the mother-son spot of all time.
I've missed you so much.
Well, tell me about yourself.
Tell me about your life. I'm a cop.
You're third generation firefighter. Come on, I thought you were going to grow out of that cop phase.
What's going on, Fats?
Frank's there. Daddy's talking to Johnny on the radio in the future.
Now, hey, little chief. There's somebody I want you to talk to.
Good night, John.
Good night there, chief.
Oh, my God.
Hello?
Something's wrong.
Something we did changed the past.
Something happened to Mom.
Your mother what?
No. She was murdered.
We gotta do something. You try to stop this guy.
I may not know who he is, but I know where he's gonna be and what he's gonna do before he gets there.
Do I call the police?
They're not gonna believe me. You got his prints.
I want you to hide that wallet.
Somewhere where nobody's gonna find it for the next 30 years.
The window seat in the dining room.
It's in! I got it!
Wow.
Give me something I can believe.
We've got to catch him in the act, and you can make that happen, Dad.
I'm not a cop. I'm a firefighter. We can do it together. Remember spirit and guts?
Guts.
I love you, son.
I love you too, Dad.
And that was Frequency.
I remember that movie. That was a good movie. I liked it.
Yeah, the only thing that I had about trailers is some trailers, they don't give you enough information, but this one here for a 2-minute trailer almost give you the entire movie all in
yeah,
2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It did.
It's kind of
weird. I liked the movie. It was really good.
My other clip that I have today is from, of course, this radio you might as well call was a cursed object, so to say, and so I bring up Friday the 13th, the series. And
oh,
in the
I
second
love
season, in the second season, they did do one about a haunted radio. You know, it's one of those old cathedral-type radios, and it's about how the radio would frighten people to death, and the owner of the radio would be given information back after the person died. So here's a clip from that.
Interlude in just a moment. And now the news. Thousands of snakes are loose this hour inside the Masseo Institute for the Criminally Insane. They began appearing an hour ago and are now reported to have overrun A ward. The ward is reported to be in chaos, with staff unable to prevent attacks on the helpless patients.
Help!
All doctors, nurses, and orderlies are being evacuated from the building before they too.
I can't get a pulse. Quick, help me.
That's the news. In a moment, we'll report on an incredible medical breakthrough by Dr. Avril Carter. This brilliant psychiatrist will tonight be rewarded for her research by discovering a cure for serial killer Craig Eddy, a paranoid psychotic who hears voices which urge him to acts of violence. But until then, we'll return to our music.
Yeah, got rewarded to kill somebody. So, but yeah, that was, and now the news from season two of Friday 13th, the series. So my little, you know, donation to today's episode. Unfortunately, awesome. I had to back my rating down. I went from a 2, actually it's a 1.5, but since we can only go 1 or 2, I had to go from 2 to 1 for this episode. And I rarely do that on any of the episodes. If I do, I might back off a 0.5 or something. But yeah, this one, like, as I said again, this episode was just really... So, let me throw it over to Bobby. Go ahead, Bobby.
All right, Robert, thank you. Boring is putting it mildly. I can honestly say that watching paint dry and watching the grace grow has never been this boring. I say this often in the series. The episodes where nothing happens did not interest me. And I generally am not that fond of character studies where it's only about a particular person and what their problem is or what they're thinking or hoping for, rather than having a story around it. And that's the problem with this story. All I can say is, to me, it's another time travel story, really, when you get right down to it, except I don't know whether it is, because I don't know whether he's imagining that he's turned the clock back or he really did turn the clock back and went back in time. So it's hard to say. If indeed it's real, then I guess that's the first time travel story in the Twilight Zone where the character really wanted to go. Others don't actually want to go and go against their will. But it's just, it's too tedious. I would say one thing, the poor man in this episode was living in the wrong era. He should be around today. No, not because of radio, but because of TV. There's so much on TV now that is old, from the 70s, 60s, and even the 50s, 70s and 80s, it's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, where we live, on our cable network, there are at least 4 or more networks that are showing nothing but old TV shows. Just about every sitcom you can imagine, dating back to the Honeymooners back in the 50s. And it's on all day and all night, so you don't have to whine and be depressed about how there's nothing on TV. If indeed that's what you like, all you have to do is turn the television on. And while there's something to be said for classic TV coming back, I don't really favor too much of that, because it stifles creativity. Nobody has the incentive to make anything new. If indeed you're just going to bring back old things, no matter how good they were. And that's the problem with that. There's so little creativity on TV today that a lot of these networks are making money hand over fist by simply getting the rights to classic TV programs and then just running them all day and all night with, as we already mentioned, more commercials than ever appeared in them when they were originally on. So I don't really feel that way. I also feel sorry for him, because I don't like the idea of going back or living in the past. I think it's a waste of time. It's like running backwards. Whatever it is you miss, can't really do anything about it. You might as well just move on and try to make things better rather than constantly living in the past. So I didn't really have a whole lot of sympathy for him. I think it's kind of silly. And it's kind of a feel-good ending tacked onto it, but I don't know if it's real or not, or he's just delusional and he thinks he's gone back. I don't have any point of view on it. I don't know whether any of it is really happening or not. It's one of those episodes that it doesn't go anywhere. And I certainly didn't need this after our last show on Dingle. Dingle was bad enough, but now this. And I was very young when this was on, and I didn't like either one of them, so I must have wondered if the Twilight Zone was running out of gas, because these are two episodes that really don't live up to what the series was.
Yeah, thank goodness that's the end of the videotapes, too, Bobby.
Oh, the videotapes are just horrible. I mean, it's a funny thing, because you might look at that and say, you know, it was ahead of its time because now, of course, we have videotape on a lot of things. But I just don't, I don't like the idea, strangely enough. I mean, it just doesn't look right for some. Maybe just because I'm used to seeing film for so many years. It just looks like a stage play, and it just looks forced. It doesn't seem right. In this episode, I don't think it does it any harm because I don't think there's anything going on. It doesn't really matter whether it's on videotape or not. But, yeah, that was one aspect of the series I really could have lived without. So
I think we got one more left, don't we, Bobby? Isn't it long-distance call?
That's the last one.
Oh, yep. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. Okay.
Long-distance call is the last videotape. That was the last one.
Yeah, and it just is, I don't know, I need a little more excitement out of the Twilight than that. I gave it a 1 originally, and ironically enough, I was going to downgrade it to 0. But now that Robert said he'd give it a 1, I guess I'll be kind and leave it there. By the way, all of our polls are always
open. I don't think it's worthy of a 0. I would give it,
oh,
I mean,
I think I could be
at the very least I'll give it a 1, huh?
Well, I could be convinced to give it a 0, sure.
Oh, no, no, come on.
I think the time travel element helped it to keep it
out of
1.
Yeah, I mean, it's not worthy of a 0.
But tell me something, Robert. Did he really go back, or is he delusional? What's the deal?
It's just, like I said, I had to fast forward and rewatch. There is just no rewatch value on this episode, unfortunately.
Yeah, sure.
Because it was years ago since I saw it, so, you know, for this review, I had to go and rewatch it, and then it just got to the point to, like I said, I fast forward, so.
Well, I'm thinking back to the episodes that you've given zeros to, and this is not as bad as some of them. I mean, this is not as bad as the thing about machines.
Oh, yeah, well, that was horrible.
All right, well, come on. I mean, this is worthy of at least
a
1.
No, I agree with Robert. It's got something in it, and I'm just not sure what it is. I can't point to anything that it has in it, but you're probably right. That's a faint recommendation, though, to say that there are worse things than this. That's not giving it any credit or anything, but I'll leave it at 1, probably because some other things are so appalling, they probably are even lower
than that. Well, let's leave it at 1, and let's see what Dave has to say about this.
All righty.
Oh, I must be the optimist in this little group.
I hope you are.
Yeah, well, many things to say. I'm not going to say it's a great episode. I'm certainly not going to say that. But there was a lot to find out about it and enjoy, certainly from my perspective. First of all, I understand when Robert says, you know, there's no rewatch value to this or whatever. But on the other hand, this was, when it was made, sort of disposable TV, wasn't it? I mean, in theory, you should be able to just enjoy it and watch it for once. The fact that you never come back to it, in effect, shouldn't be something that loses a rating. Admittedly, you give something a higher rating if you can rewatch it. I mean, you referenced that film Frequency, which I love. I've got it on the disc. I've watched it a dozen times. With Dennis Quaid and Jim Cassavetes, or whatever his name is.
Caviezel,
that's it. I mean, I love that film. But, I mean, basically, I mean, a lot of these films, when we're doing these shows, the episodes, rather, it's the first time I've watched them for perhaps 10 or 15 years. So I'm not bored, and I certainly don't fast forward through them. I quite like this one in a way, but it's perhaps one of the reasons is because the irascible character, the main chap played by Dean Jagger, the you know, Ed, I quite like him as an actor. One of the films I remember seeing him in was another favourite film of mine called Bad Day at Black Rock, where he played a washed-out sheriff.
Spencer Tracy.
One of
my all-time favorite Western movies. I love that movie.
Right.
Yes,
well, this chap, Dean Jagger, played the washed-out sheriff that was just not. He'd never investigated the death of the, you know, the Japanese immigrant who's that Spencer Tracy went out, you know, to pass on a medal. And he goes out to the ranch and he sees the deserts, the flowers growing in the deserts, and he knows that something's gone wrong, and then he investigates, and probably most people know the plot of Bad Day at Black Rock. But Dean Jagger was in that. The little lady who played what I assume is the landlady, Alice Pierce, she was in On the Town. She's that the little woman with the little funny little small chin. Another woman who... died sadly quite young. And as you said, the Bob Crane character who ended up as Hogan in Hogan's Heroes. And there was even the bully sort of a guy. I think he was in the stage plays of West Side Story. Always check from wiki pages, by the way. No great knowledge on my part. But one of the things that wasn't lost on me was somewhat of the irony in this story, because this chap, Ed, was bemoaning the fact that all his housemates in the boarding thing were lost in TV. They were watching TV like wallpaper. He was going to do exactly the same thing with radio. So in one respect, he was no different than them, other than that he was time-shifted in his thoughts and feelings. Now, one of the things that was mentioned by a couple of years, the fact that, you've got to get yourself into the mind frame of, when radio was at this point in time, being junked because TV was the new entertainment system. But one of the things that's taught us, I think, certainly here in the UK, is that every new entertainment system that comes out doesn't replace the old one. It comes alongside it. So you have books, then you have newspapers, then you have books, newspapers and magazines, then you have books, newspapers, magazines, radio, then you have books, newspapers, magazines, radio, movies, then TV, then the internet. I mean, in the UK, particularly.
So you have options, in other words.
Yeah.
You have options.
Well, particularly in the UK, certainly, radio listening is as high now as it ever was. Now, admittedly, a lot of that listening goes on either in people's commute to work and back in the car, or it goes on where they've got the internet radio playing on the back of their computer, or indeed sort of radio podcasts. So, in a way, this was a time that was reflecting what was happening then, where radio was being taken over by the TV. People were starting to stop going to the movies. So it actually, as we always say with these programs, they always reflect the concerns and the worries of the time in which it was made. So this was obviously one of the things that was worrying people at the time, that radio was now seen as what your dad listened to and you watched the TV.
Right.
What other things? I don't think, at the end, I do think it was them supposed to be going back in time. But I don't think they were very convincing. I mean, you can't just put a toupee on a chap and he suddenly looks 30 years younger. I mean, I think that was slightly ineffectual the way they did that.
So, Dave, you think he physically went back or mentally went back?
Yes, because if you notice, the whole room changed as well. It wasn't just him, and also it wasn't just him looking younger in the mirror. There were two of them in the room. So, but I like time travel films, so that was probably my reading of it on that. And one thing to echo what Bobby said, here in the UK, one of the fastest growing, with number of viewers, TV channel is one called Vintage TV that's just been going 6 months in the UK, but it's gone from 0 to 2 million subscribers.
Really?
In 6 months. Yeah. It shows programs from the 40s up to 1980 is its deadline, I think. But of course, they are because advertisers suddenly realise that it's the people in the 40s, 50s and 60s who may have disposable income, and they're the ones that want to watch this sort of thing. And what else have I got to say? Oh, yeah, I did like the reference when the bully guy was saying, you couldn't have been listening to it. And then the professor types up, well, he was probably listening to a recording. And I like the fact that they referenced that before tape, programs were recorded on wax
wires and
records,
things.
And then and wire, of course, it literally was a wire, wasn't it, that it was recorded on. So I actually liked that. So I quite enjoyed it. One of the funny things nowadays with the particular the way society moves, I thought it was quite funny when he had this radio which must have weighed 100 weight. And he's got this little 9-year-old kid umping it up the stairs, you know. You know, now he'd get done for child cruelty or something, if he did that. This poor kid's at the bottom trying to hump this bloody thing up his stairs.
Hey, you know that kid went on to be on Leave It to Beaver. He was on,
right.
He was on Leave It to Beaver. He was his friend, Whitey.
Stephen Talbot.
Whitey.
He
was on Leave It to Beaver as Whitey. Yeah.
Right. So, I'm not going to make any great, grandiose grounds for this episode, but as a little stage play, and I probably won't watch it again. I fully take on board what Robert said about it. I won't probably watch it again. But to say, you know, it was one of the ones that maybe I hadn't watched it often. I may have only watched it ever once before. I quite let it play over me and quite enjoyed it. What was it I was going on about myself? That was it. I use Twitter quite a lot, and I tweeted a couple of days ago that I'd caught on the BBC radio, they'd been playing some old programmes, and the actual programme was, it was the Carpenters. It was a recording of their first visit to the UK. I think it was in 1972 or 76. And for some anniversary, they were playing this programme. And you know what? I was on my computer. I was listening to it via the internet radio, the BBC internet. And I really enjoyed an hour and a half of listening to Karen Carpenter, you know, singing. I really enjoyed it. And I'm thinking, I was that old man, you know, lying back in my chair, listening to hits of yesteryear. So I suppose that
means
fantastic. I could relate to
her.
Yeah.
She must have been playing Superstar and some of her other hits, yeah.
Oh,
It was after their first. It was when she still used to hide behind the drums, and it was the, you know,
her brother on
the
piano.
It's only just begun. Rainy Days and Mondays.
Exactly. I knew the words of every blooming one she played. So I could understand him sort of, you know, throwing his mattress on the floor or whatever it was and lying down and, you know, his cares drifting away. So I can't get two and a half is probably all it rates. But for a one-off watch, I quite enjoyed it. So I'm a big softie. There you go.
All right. I love that. Rick, what do you have to say?
Not much. Everybody said most of what I feel too. Just one thing, though. Dave, the English has always taken more to advances in stuff than us here in the States. I believe you guys had jet engines before we did.
Yeah, Whittle invented the jet engine.
Stuff like that. And you know, your society, as much as it is like ours, is slightly different than ours, as I just said. You know, you guys take to electronics and changes and industry and stuff a lot different. Look at the
Beatles. Yeah.
Yep, but that's a little different than what I'm talking about. That's culture. Well, yeah, that is. Like in the 1980s, you guys had real high unemployment, and yet you were doing better economically than we were.
Well, we probably didn't spend as much on defense, but that's political, so perhaps we'd better not go there.
But no, because you guys realized that computers would eliminate a lot of industries like travel agencies and stuff like that as travel agencies and stuff like that.
Are you relating this back to this program, though, in some way?
Not really. that's why I'm going to stop here.
You're like a geek, and your point being?
Well, I've got Scooter Larry here who wants to say something. Scooter?
Hi, Larry.
Hi, Larry. You want to say something? Larry?
Are you self-muted? You're unmuted here.
No, he's unmuted. Larry, are you there?
Do you want to put in text? Are you trying to talk?
Are you trying to talk?
Yeah, I heard something.
Yeah, I did too. I hope you can say something.
This is the Higher Relay Service, CA-8705, with a call from Larry Petrie. Have you received a speech-to-speech call before?
No.
Okay, one moment while I explain. The person on the line is speech-disabled and is using the relay service to communicate with you.
That's fine.
The caller will speak directly to you, and anything you say, just please speak directly back to them.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hi, Larry.
There'll be a delay, I expect.
Larry, are you there?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, I heard that. Do you want to say something else?
Let's give a rating of the show.
And did you like the show, Larry? Did you like this episode?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes,
he said yes. Yes. Great. Okay, good. Great, that's good. I'm glad you liked it. That's wonderful. Thank you, Larry.
Can you give a rating out of 5?
What do you think, 1 through 5? One through five, 5 being the best. What would your rating be on this episode?
A two.
A two? You would give it a 2? Two.
Yes.
Okay, that's cool. So that's about an average. Okay, you're giving it an average rating. That's wonderful. Awesome. Okay, so you give it a 2 rating. Larry, thank you so much. I hope you call into our show again. I would love to have you call into our show again. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay, well, that's great. We have a new caller in here. That's wonderful. Larry's here. Well, okay, so today we've had Felix and Robert and Larry and Dave and Rick, and we had Frank for a while, and we have Bobby and me and everybody else. And so, 2 weeks from now.
I never gave a rating, by the way.
Oh, what's your rating, by the way?
Consensus 2.
A 2?
Yep.
So you and Larry are on 2s. Okay, you and Larry give it a 2. And that's cool. All right, awesome. So we're kind of all over the board. We've got a 1, we've got 2, we've got 2.5. Okay, and some people I think gave it a good over at the Yahoo group. So
excuse
I don't know.
Me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sure, repeat that.
You want to say something, Larry?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. It's not always translating clearly.
Does Larry want to say something?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
I heard no.
Okay. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, what does he want to say? We're always open for opinions. Take your time, Larry. Just tell us what you want to say. Yes. Do you have something to say, Larry? No? Okay. All right, well, that's great. I'm just glad you're here today. So we are going to be back on 2 weeks from now, on July 30th. July 30th, we will be back, and I do believe our show is going to be The Prime Mover. Is that correct,
yes.
Robert?
Buddy Epson, yep.
Buddy Epson, The Prime Mover, awesome. So 2 weeks from now, we're going to be back with The Prime Mover. We hope to see everyone here. Unless somebody has any more to say, then we're going to just say goodnight and have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
The communication device that is plural.
This is CA-8655 continuing the call for Larry. I use a speaking device that makes it slow to communicate.
No, we understand. We understand. Does he have anything else to say?
Yes.
I think, ladies, not to ask, do you have anything else to say, is say what you want to say.
What do you want to say, Larry? Okay, well, I think we're... Okay, well, I think we're going, unless Larry has...
Perhaps if unfortunately, because it's at the end of the show, you leave it now, and next week when Larry calls in, we can give him more time to prepare.
Yes, Larry, we'll give you more time next week. We're going to be back 2 weeks from now on the 30th, and we're going to be talking about The Prime Mover. So we're going to end the show for now, and we will see you in 2 weeks, hopefully. Okay, have a great weekend, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
And on that note, we'll end with this.